5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Morning, folks. Happy Friday. I'm Ben O'Shea, filling in one last time this week for Jenna Clark. The revelation yesterday that 39 murders had been allegedly carried out by the Australian Special Forces in Afghanistan was a bitter pill for many West Aussies to swallow. The findings were the result of a controversial four-year Defence Force inquiry, which also recommended the soldiers involved be prosecuted for committing war crimes. Defence Chief Angus Campbell said the SAS 2nd Squadron will now be disbanded. The allegations made by the report are deeply concerning. Make no mistake about that. The story has made global news, which damages our reputation in the international community. It's especially troubling to us in the West, where the SAS barracks in Swanbourne is a source of state pride that almost rivals the West Coast Eagles. And look, no one is making the argument that committing the acts alleged in this report is acceptable. But we shouldn't forget that the vast majority of Australian service personnel have done nothing wrong. Nor should we diminish the role the SAS plays as the tip of the spear. I've spoken personally to kids of fallen SAS troopers. I've spoken to people who work tirelessly to raise money to support those kids. The sacrifices their fathers made in the line of duty are unimaginable to us civilians. Unlike you and me, these men and women risk their lives every time they go to work. It's not an excuse. Nothing could excuse the alleged acts. But it is something we all must think about before we rush to judgment. The big question, of course, is what happens now? To find out, we'll talk to the chairman of the National SAS Association, as well as the head of RSLWA. Let's get into it.
The West Live.
The West Live.
With Ben O'Shea for Jenna Clark. Brought to you by NEDS. Take it to the NEDS level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858.
Yesterday was a very difficult day for Australians. The allegations of misconduct sending shockwaves across the country. But particularly here in WA, where the Special Air Services Regiment has a strong bond. Joining me now is the National Chair of the SAS Association, Peter Fitzpatrick. Peter, as a former member of the SAS, how are you feeling this morning?
Oh, pretty down, I guess, is the best way of describing it. A lot of my members are the same. You know, we serve with great pride in that regiment. We love that regiment. We all had to do incredibly difficult things even to get in the front door of the place. And most of us who have fought on operations, you know, we've put our lives on the line. We've been in harm's way in more ways than one. You know, the regiment's protected us from terrorists and various other things over the years. We've been involved in just about the first cab off the rank, if you like, in just about every conflict, peacekeeping operation, some of the most difficult places in the world. To have this sort of dropped on us, we knew it was coming, but I think it was worse than what we expected.
Are you concerned about the way this process has unfolded?
There's a danger in this because there's a lot of water to go under the bridge here. This could roll on for 10 years. You know, we've yet to set up this new commission, or that they're setting up investigative commission with federal police lawyers and administrative staff. That'll take a number of months, I would imagine, 3 or 4 months. Then they've got to start investigating 39 murders. We already found that it's just taken us four and a half years to get this far. And then you've got, if there are people going to be charged with serious criminal offences, then that's the court process, and we know what that's like, and appeal processes if it gets to that. So the families that I'm really worried about, and many of them are at breaking point, they've already been through 4 years of hell. Their kids have been taunted at school and all this sort of stuff. And who knows, in some cases, people may not be found guilty of any offence, but they will have been through 8 or 9 years of hell in the process. So it's very troubling for, one, the reputation of the regiment, and, but two, for the families and the kids who were caught up in the slipstream of this.
Mm. And we've seen similar inquiries in the UK and the US. The case of Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher is a recent example in America. How has our inquiry compared to those?
I think ours has been longer and probably more detailed. Certainly there have been inquiries. Even the British SAS had their own inquiry, and I think, strangely enough, I think it was C Squadron over there was disbanded. So there's a precedent for it, and I think the Canadians actually disbanded one of their para regiments as a consequence of military actions that were regarded as being beyond the rules of war. So there's a precedent for this sort of thing occurring, but I think this is probably, from what I know of it anyway, one of the most comprehensive inquiries that have ever been conducted into military operations by any nation in the world.
And Defence Chief Angus Campbell said that the second squadron is to be disbanded. You mentioned those other squadrons that have been disbanded around the world. For people who don't understand what that means, can you explain it to us?
Well, the second squadron is one of the four or five squadrons that they have down at the regiment. I served in that squadron. I've served in three of the squadrons in the regiment, but I served in that one for 6 months of my 12-month tour of Vietnam. And so that hurt to hear that squadron disappearing off the order of battle. And I know people who served all their time in the regiment in that squadron, and they're really hurting because, we had a two-squadron reunion in Brisbane about 18 months ago, and it was a marvellous event. We all caught up with one another from everybody from the Vietnam War, Afghan War, and other operations that squadron has been on, Timor and so on. So there's quite a camaraderie around the fact that you served proudly with a squadron that did some amazing work over its time. And to see it hauled off the order of battle like this is a bitter pill to swallow, I've got to say.
Is it anything more than optics?
Oh, I think there's a lot of optics in it, but I think it's also, I don't envy the Chief of Defence trying to sort of navigate this way. There's the political considerations. He's got to be seen to be taking a stance on things. And hard as it may be, I can see this sort of, to me, looks like he needed to take a stance so that, we're serious about this, and we're so serious about it, we're actually going to take this action which impacts directly on the squadron that probably had the most to answer for, if you like, in relation to these alleged crimes. Mm.
And the SAS is so very strongly tied to Western Australia. Are the Campbell Barracks safe down the track?
Yes. It would be an own goal if we were to do anything further than to remove them from Western Australia or to remove the whole regiment off the order of battle. That would be great news for our enemies, that's for sure. So I would not think there's going to be any change in that. There will be changes in the structure of command and the way things are done, I'm sure, over time. We have Special Operations Command, which is predominantly over on the East Coast, and I'm sure there'll be different ways of doing things. And look, with modern technology, a command across the nation is nothing like it was years ago when I was down there, where you hardly ever saw people from the East Coast. Mm. I think there's a huge investment in Campbell Barracks. That regiment now, and you've got to remember there's very few in that regiment, certainly a very, very much a minority, who actually served in Afghanistan. And I'm going down there today to young men and women, young men rather, who have been given their berets, their Sandy berets, as a consequence of passing one of the most arduous tests in the world. And they're amazing young people. They go through a selection process that's even harder than it was when I was there. And they're ready to serve the nation. So I think the investment in Campbell Barracks and in the SAS regiment is an investment in our security in the region. And as I've said, throughout the decades that I've been involved with it, the regiment's always the first cab off the rank when it comes to putting people in harm's way in some of the most inhospitable and difficult areas of the world.
You've mentioned our enemies and security in the region. Now, these young men that will get their sandy coloured berets today, does this report affect their safety and the safety of our troops on the ground overseas?
I don't think so. I think there's no doubt that people who probably wish Australia harm rather than anything else will try and make something of this. And I'm sure that's why I'm really worried sometimes that the media plays into those sort of into the hands of those sort of people who want to actually undermine what we're doing. So that's why I'm very conscious of making sure that that regiment survives as it is. Many of the changes that General Campbell was talking about yesterday have already been done. You know, I've been really close to two of the recent commanding officers who've done amazing jobs down there in building a different culture. So I think it's the regiment's in fine shape. There will be some tweaking, I'm sure, going on. There may be some changes in the command structure. But by and large, it's a regiment that you can be proud of and is ready to go tomorrow to defend the nation.
And one of the recommendations of the report was that thousands of awards and citations could be stripped. What do you make of that? Because you don't just get these in a cornflakes box. There are incredible acts of bravery associated with these awards and citations.
I don't think there's thousands, but there are two categories. There are awards for bravery and valour, and they will only be looked at in the context of any criminal actions that take place. And I guess if someone is found guilty of a crime, then removing those awards will be considered at that time. Other awards are for distinguished service, and these are quite often awarded to people in the chain of command, where as a consequence of their service in a particular area, they're awarded something for the way in which they have performed their role. And I think what is being said is that people who were in command, perhaps, of troops at the time a lot of these atrocities took place, their award will be reviewed by the Chief of Army. And I'm just hopeful there'll be a proper process for that, so that there's an opportunity and a procedural fairness, I suppose, is what I would expect. And it is possible, if people have commanded troops and possibly should have known more or didn't do enough, then there's a possibility they could lose some of those awards. But they're not the ones for valour. They're more the ones for meritorious service in command of people.
And now Prime Minister Scott Morrison says that he supports the Defence Forces, but says justice must be served. Are you happy with the PM's response?
I was a little bit concerned a couple of times that there was, I'm a great one for it, the presumption of innocence. Mm. And there are a couple of times the Prime Minister sort of put his words in a way that it was almost a presumption of guilt, if you know what I mean. So I was a bit, I don't think he meant to do that, but it's just the way he came across. I think he was so caught up in the seriousness of the allegations that were before him and the severity of them, I think it's easy to fall into a way of expressing yourself where you almost assume that these things are going to pan out in a way where everyone's going to be found guilty. And that's not the way our criminal justice system works. These things have not even been fully investigated yet. They've been investigated to the extent that concern has been raised, but the federal police have yet to start detailed investigations. And then there's a whole court process, and as you know, it's the presumption of innocence is part of our judicial system. And the other thing that I've been calling for, of course, is procedural fairness. You know, we've got to make sure that the whole process that we go through, that these people are given competent legal advice and representation that at least matches what, you know, the Commonwealth has put into this so far in getting it to this stage, and what they will use in terms of legal prosecution when it comes to matters that might go to trial. So there's a danger. We've just got to remember that there's young men out there who are hanging on by a thread, families, as I said, in very serious situations. And I think we've just got to keep talking about, let's be fair about this, let's do it properly, let's presume everyone's innocent until such time as we have evidence to the contrary.
Mm, absolutely. National Chairman of the SAS Association, Peter Fitzpatrick, thanks for your time.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Now, there is no doubt that this long-awaited and controversial report will be having ripples through the entire military community, including our veterans. Joining me now is RSL WA CEO John McCourt. Thanks for your time, John.
Good morning, Ben.
Now, have you had any feedback from members overnight?
I have, and it's a mix of sadness. It's a mix of let's make sure that, as Peter Fitzpatrick just said, there is due diligence in the terms of the legal system. And I suppose for many veterans, they are concerned that many of them have nothing to do with these alleged incidents, that it could adversely affect their own personal reputations within the community.
Yeah, do you think that's a very real possibility that all of service personnel will be tarred with this brush?
I don't think all, but there'll be a certain degree of it, I think, just by human nature. And our mission and my mission in terms of RSL WA is to make sure we get all our ducks in a row in terms of looking after the well-being, welfare and mental health of all those veterans who served in Afghanistan as a top priority.
And so what will that involve?
Well, that involved just that. We have some extended resources to with mental health counsellors, psychologists, psychiatry services, and also basic welfare. Those who are feeling that they are ostracised or potentially not considered worthy veterans, we will be there to help. And that includes services from our newly opened Veteran Central Facility in Perth, but also right around Western Australia. So we've got a big job, and we're expecting, I shouldn't say expecting the worst, but a realist would know that there'll be an increase in our need to support them.
And how do you think, when a report is handed down like this, how does that reopen the wounds for people who have served in Afghanistan?
I don't know whether it's reopening the wounds, but look, I served in Afghanistan, albeit very briefly, but my colleagues and myself, it's a mix of sadness and not being very happy about it all, because allegedly a few have done the wrong thing, should these allegations be proved, of course, which affects the majority. Myself and my colleagues and my subordinates have served with honour and integrity, and we're very proud of our service.
And do you think it'll stop people enlisting in the future?
No, I don't think so. I think that defence in Australia is bigger than that. This is an awful chapter. Once again, as Peter said, there's a presumption of innocence. However, there is significant concern already expressed by the Chief of Defence Force. I don't think it will affect it at all, maybe sporadically in terms of attitude, but I think Australia is bigger than this.
Now, I note in the report that the top brass has been absolved of any fault here. It feels like that happened pretty early in the process. Doesn't the buck stop at the top when it comes to these sorts of things?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, because it's who knew when, and that's a problem. There is some concern that such behaviour is sometimes contained within the lower ranks who make their own decisions about their behaviour. So I'm only speculating, but I think it's a bit harsh at this stage to see that the top brass is directly responsible. But look, as Angus Campbell, the CDF, said yesterday, it'll be thorough, including those who should have known and then those who should have led better.
Mm. And what do you think needs to change moving forward?
That's a hard one. Well, the big one is rotations. There's an old saying about the fog of war, but it's not excusing any of the alleged behaviour, but it becomes a new normal. If you're in a situation over there where you have no idea who the enemy is, you have an enemy that doesn't even comply or recognise the Geneva Convention, you don't know and this is an awful thing to say, but it was reality when I was over there, you don't know whether a child or a woman or bloke is coming up to shake your hand or blow you up. So I'm not excusing anything, but it's a very difficult environment. Once again, it's not excusing any illegal behaviour, but the fog of war is sometimes very thick.
And it's something I think that us civilians in Australia would do a good job to remember, I think, before we are quick to cast our judgments on social media.
Well, exactly. And after just reflecting again what Peter Fitzpatrick says, there is we live in a fantastic free democratic society where the presumption of innocence is paramount.
RSL WA CEO John McCourt, wish you all the best looking after your members, our veterans, in the coming weeks. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Ben.
The West Live. Making news.
Joining me now again in the studio is Sunrise presenter El Giorgio. El, how are you doing? Happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday. I'm glad it's finally Friday, to be honest with you.
And you got an update on the hotel quarantine testing?
Yeah, so it started today, officially.
So the first nostrils were swabbed.
It's not you. Are you happy about that?
I'm very happy.
Yeah, but it's all happening. We got a little bit more clarification around who will have to do it, because as the Premier said yesterday, it's very unpleasant and they don't really want to have to do this to people, but it's based on best health advice and this is what they've decided to do. So it's mainly for security staff, people who do actually come as close into contact with those infected cases, and cleaners as well. So I think we were discussing that yesterday. How far does it stretch?
So the bellhop is okay. Yeah, the guy in the lobby bar, he's all right.
I think so. And people in the kitchen, like people who just aren't going to come into contact with those cases, those positive cases in hotel quarantine. But we do know that Adelaide started on a pizza box.
Did it?
Yeah, apparently.
All these stories takes you back to the start of this pandemic, where everybody was so conscious of, can it live on a surface? How long can it live on a surface? We don't think about that at all in WA anymore.
Not anymore, but especially, when that came out of Adelaide, I thought it doesn't travel on things like that, but apparently it did.
Yeah, well, there's still so much we don't know about this virus.
Absolutely.
Talking about things that I didn't know, some statistics about why we're ending up in the emergency room.
Yes, so 1 in 5... or 20% of all people who go to the emergency room here in Perth, it has something to do with alcohol. It's alcohol related. Huge number. It's actually 22%, but the best way to quantify it is, 1 in 5.
And how does that compare to elsewhere in the country?
Pretty bad. I think we're 5% out ahead of the second place.
What?
Yeah, so I think Adelaide was 15 and we're 22. Victoria had a really good year. I think they were 10 down to 8%, so they had a 2% drop. But yeah, we're boozing hard and we're getting ourselves into strife here
in
WA.
It's not just like alcohol consumption related. It's like if we have an accident while we're drinking alcohol.
Yes.
Yeah, so like it could be you fall over, you split your head open, or
been related to alcohol, and alcohol has gotten you to the point where you're in the emergency room. Yeah.
Yeah. How unnecessary.
I know.
And you think about the poor people working in those EDs, they're already dealing with the people on meth. Mm. Then they've got a whole bunch of, drunk idiots who have probably done something that they shouldn't have. It's just, firstly, a terrible waste of their time, a waste of taxpayer money.
Well, exactly. And it says in the article, it just makes it so much harder to deal with people when they are so heavily inebriated.
Yep. And so. also for the people who are just unfortunately ill or have hurt themselves in an accident that haven't done the wrong thing and consume too much alcohol.
Yeah.
Like they're stuck behind 20 drunk turkeys.
Exactly. It's tough.
But Christmas self-gifting. Now, tell me about this. I've heard a little bit about this.
This is one I can really personally get around because I do this 12 months a year, not just in December in the lead up to Christmas. But it's predicted that because of COVID, a lot more people have money in their pockets. Yep. They haven't travelled overseas or even interstate. So it's predicted that we're all going to spend more on ourselves this year. Yeah, to lift our own spirits, COVID. Fair enough, right?
I like it. It might be hard to believe in Santa if you know that you've purchased the gift for yourself. But apart from that, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I've seen a few people on Instagram who post themselves something and it's like, you can get a complimentary gift card if you want. And it's like, to Ben, from Ben.
Yeah.
You do you. You're doing so well. So maybe there'll be a few of those this Christmas. But Spending is tipped to be $793 million in the lead up to Christmas. That's just in Western Australia.
Wow.
And that figure would be up 14% on last year. So
doesn't
that's a huge
the economy
boost.
Need it though?
Oh, big time.
The flip side, the only problem I can see with the self-gifting is, like, say for someone like me, like I know that my other half always has such a hard time deciding what to get me for birthdays or Christmas. So if I'm just buying whatever I want for myself, that's going to make her job even tougher.
I know. Well, maybe just like a wish list, you know?
Yeah, wish list. That's a good idea.
And then swap them and say, well, you can't disappoint me now.
Yeah, yeah. Great idea.
Yeah. I'm going to be doing it with my husband for sure.
Exactly. Take my own idea. Remove the element of chance. Elle, thank you so much for joining me. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Now, coming up on The West Live, the huge food craze in Korea that's only just hit Perth. We'll tell you what it is in the Wild West.
Get into the garden with Charlie Orbone.
Summer's so close, I can almost taste it. And that means we'll all be spending a lot more time outdoors and probably in the garden. You might want to start a little DIY project in your backyard. Maybe a water feature might look great in your little oasis. But there are some do's and don'ts. Our garden expert, the greenest thumb in the country, Charlie Orbone, how are things?
The greenest thumb in the country. I do like that. Thank you very much.
Now,
I'm very well, thank you.
Now, we're talking water features today. Why is it a good idea to have one?
I love water features. I put them into almost every design I do. I think they have this amazing quality of sound. They can be emotive. They can be relaxing. And I think, you know, gardening is about contriving nature in this way that looks nice to the eye, and water is just part of that story.
Now, I woke up one morning and found that I had a water feature in my garden, but it turned out to be just a split reticulation hose that had caused a pond.
Pipe.
Does that count?
Not quite, no, because you go out and you go, oh, rather than, ah.
Yeah, and so are they hard to set up?
They can be quite difficult depending on how complicated they are. Now, you can buy something that's already set up with a reservoir and it's got its own pump and it literally is just plug-in. And that's it. You plug it in, fill it with water, and it's off. But you've got to be aware that that doesn't mean it's going to last very long. Mm. So if you want something that's a long-term design effect in the garden, you need to be looking at investing, you know, a decent amount of money into doing something that's going to survive for a long time and have the right pumps and filters and UV filters and all that stuff, because the worst thing with a water feature is when they go stale and then they become mosquito breeding grounds.
Well, you've hit on a few things that I want to talk to you about here. First, because I'm a bit of a cheapskate, let's talk about the costs. Are they costly to maintain, and what sort of ballpark figure are we talking to set up a decent one?
Oh, look, you can buy one for sort of $500, but you can also put one in and it's going to cost almost the same as a swimming pool, to be honest with you. It all depends on the size that you go for and how complicated the water movement is. Because, you know, you can make these amazing effects where water runs downstairs. You can have bouncing fountains of like Versailles type thing. So it all depends really how much you go for it.
And you mentioned mozzies. Is that only a problem if the water stops running in the water feature?
Yeah, so it's just if the water goes still. So normally a mosquito, it'll be 10 days before you start getting bitten by a bit of still water. And that can be anything from in the base of a pot or anything like that. But you don't want to bring in, you know, still water like reflective bowls if you can't empty them once a week and refill them once a week. But then there's natural ways of getting rid of mosquitoes as well. You can have fish there, and you can run it through various filters and UV lights, and that definitely kills them off.
And are they plumbed, or do you just fill them up with water and then it sort of recycles the water?
That's where the complicatedness, this is a professional term, the complicatedness and the cost comes in, because you can have an automatic top-up, because you're always going to lose some water through evaporation, but you can have an automatic top-up that tops it up as well. And then you need an overflow as well, so it doesn't just spill out onto the grass or onto the patio or something like that. So when it does fill up with rain, it gets taken off and discharged off properly.
Mm. And what, in your opinion, is the best water feature that you've ever built?
So I built one at the Chelsea Flower Show. My father passed away when I was 15, and this water feature was supposed to represent that feeling of loss. So it filled up with water really slowly over about 7 or 8 minutes. It was an enormous big sandstone bowl. And then all of a sudden, within about 3 seconds, the whole thing emptied out of a hole in the bottom. and it sort of pulsated and really had this emotive effect. And I had people who saw it on TV coming up to me in tears saying, you know, how much it touched them, and then it would slowly fill up again. And it was you know, I don't like blowing my own trumpet, but it was a pretty special water feature, yeah.
And at the Chelsea Flower Show, the World Cup of gardening, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, I'm glad it worked. Otherwise, it would look like a fool.
Now, are there any other real no-nos that people need to be aware of?
I guess when it comes to water features, you have to be aware of your pool fencing regulations, which sounds crazy, but anything over sort of 300 millimetres in depth requires a pool fence. Mm. So there's sort of ways around that where you can sort of fill the base up with some sort of plastic blocks, so you still get the depth of water, which keeps it cool and prevents evaporation, but it gets around those rules. But you also have to think the rules are there for a reason. So just make sure you're safe with them and you don't break those rules.
And if you're putting fish in them, is there anything you need to be aware of before you do that to keep them alive?
I guess you need to give the fish somewhere to shelter, because birds do like to eat fish, yeah. And you can put a lot of fish in and they can disappear very quickly. But that's also great because you can start growing water lilies and things like that to make a nice pond, and then the fish will be safe in there.
And if you want to do sort of a, you know, sort of a cultural thing and maybe have like a sort of a, like a Japanese garden, like that's a culture where water features can be a big part of gardens, is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, so many styles of gardens have different styles of water features in them. And like with any garden and any elements you put into that garden, the feature has to suit the style, because you don't want a bit of Japanese right next to a bit of tropical, right next to a bit of formal, you know, that sort of feels a bit disjointed. So if you do have a Japanese style garden, then a Japanese style water feature is definitely the way to go.
Well, I'm doing a little bit of a Japanese thing in my backyard, so I might start digging a hole on the weekend.
Dig a hole, put some pond liner in it. Let the mosquitoes come in.
Charlie Albone, we look forward to reading your column in this weekend's Sunday Times and seeing you on Better Homes and Gardens tonight. Thanks for your time and have a great weekend in the garden.
Thank you, you too.
Coming up, the brand new basketball courts that no one can use due to noise complaints. We'll tell you which suburb is actually home to a collection of Karens on the Wild West. Here's a sobering statistic. According to the ABS, domestic violence affected more than 2 million Australians in 2016. And this year, lockdown has put some of society's most vulnerable at even more risk. I think it's fair to say we need a bit of a wake-up call. A poll commissioned by White Ribbon Australia found more than 40% of men aged between 18 and 34 don't think hitting or punching is considered domestic violence. Wow. So how do you combat that mentality when it's hidden behind closed doors? You start a conversation, and that's exactly what White Ribbon Day is about. White Ribbon Australia Executive Director Brad Chilcott, thanks for joining me on The West Live.
Thanks for having me. Great to be with you.
Now, today is White Ribbon Day. How are people across the country getting involved?
Well, we're asking people to hold events on White Ribbon Day to raise awareness of some of those things that you've mentioned, and there's a diversity of those events across Australia. Many of them have come online because of the pandemic and uncertainty around gathering, but the point of these events today is not just to know about family and domestic violence, not just to know about men's violence against women, but to commit to action. And so that's really the focus this year, is to encourage people to create community action groups in their town, their suburb, their sporting club, their faith community, their multicultural group, because I think to address some of those horrible statistics we revealed in that poll, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. We need to take community-led responses and find solutions in different places across Australia and in different ways.
Well, you talk about statistics. Already this year, more than 34 women have been killed in Australia, and the Chief Justice of the Family Court said domestic violence is the worst it's been in 30 years. How have we got to this point?
Yeah, something has gone horribly wrong. I mean, the fact that men in that age bracket that you mentioned could answer those questions in that way shows that we haven't got a message out there effectively enough, that still many men think that they have the right to exert power and control over their female partners, that they still have the right to be in charge and to use violence to maintain that authority. And so we really have to keep working on gender equality and the respect that comes from seeing other people as our equals. And that's why I'm saying we can't just simply broadcast this out universally across Australia and everyone gets it. We need to have really specific targeted approaches that make sure everyone begins to understand healthy relationships, gender equality, appropriate behaviour in a way that resonates with them and that they can understand.
Well, you talk about all the awareness and education that's happened, and then the poll that you guys commissioned that found 2 in 5 men aged between 18 and 34 don't think hitting or punching is domestic violence. How is that possible?
Oh, as I just said, I think we need to make sure people are hearing this message from the right spokespeople that they choose to listen to, whether it's their faith leaders or their sporting heroes or people who speak in their language. We need to make sure that people are not just, seeing an ad on TV or, attending a White Ribbon Day event, or that their workplace is workplace accredited through White Ribbon Australia, but that these messages are really able to reach people who are who are part of diverse communities, whether that's in different locations or in different multicultural groups.
Mm. And we've seen around the world that one of the impacts of COVID forcing people to be locked into houses has seen an increase of domestic violence. Is that something that you're seeing here in Australia?
Oh, definitely. The statistics here have increased during the pandemic, and especially in regards to women experiencing men's violence for the first time. So it's not, just the repeat offenders continuing to offend. There's huge numbers of relationships that have started to experience violence for the first time during the pandemic. But what I think is really important to understand is that we can't blame stress or financial insecurity or the uncertainty of this time in history on, we can't blame all of that for the violence. Men are still choosing to use violence. They're choosing to respond to that stress with violence. And this is what needs to change. Men reflecting on their own actions, becoming accountable for them, but also moving to a place of respect where that kind of behaviour is just not the response to the uncertainty of these times.
So what's the one thing young men could do today on White Ribbon Day to make a positive change to this terrible situation?
Well, let me say two things. The first one is to really listen to the women in your lives. Really listen. Stop and not respond, just listen and ask them about their experience of being a woman in our society, out in public, in the workplace, in the home, and allow them to speak and believe them and let them sink in. And secondly, when you see your friends or people around you making sexist jokes, talking derogatory in a derogatory way about women, treating them like the man deserves to be in charge, then speak up. Take action and don't let that kind of thing be normalised in your social group and community.
Mm. White Ribbon Australia Executive Director Brad Chilcott, it's great work that you're doing. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Our wagering sponsor, Neds, has some great products to help you take the 2020 Ascot Racing Carnival to the Neds level. Neds Same Race Multi allows you to pump up your odds in the one race. Simply head to the Same Race Multi tab in your chosen race and watch your odds increase as you select 2 to 4 runners to finish anywhere inside the top 4. This product isn't just available on thoroughbreds, though. You can use the Same Race Multi on greyhounds and harness racing too. Neds Same Race Multi is available every day on all 3 racing codes. Check it out today and take it to the Neds level. TNCs apply. Visit the website for details. And as always, gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
The Wild West.
Joining me now in the studio for the Wild West is my colleague, Bonnie Rayner. Bonnie, after you sent me your talking points last night, I could not wait to talk about this first one. Lay it on me.
The first one. Now, are you wanting to play basketball first?
No,
or
croffle,
are you wanting to talk food
Let's
first?
Talk croffle.
Yeah, good. Okay, that is the correct answer. Well played. Now, what better way to kickstart your Friday morning than with a bit of a heads up of where you're about to spend your weekend searching for the latest craze? So we've all heard of the cronut.
Yes, love a cronut.
Cronut, that's obviously the mixture between a croissant and a donut. How about a croffle?
A croffle.
It is the newest craze, and it is the mixture of when a croissant and a waffle say I do.
Yeah, right.
So it's been around for a couple of years, but obviously as the most isolated city in the world, we have to do things a little bit delayed. And now in recent days, you can officially get it in Perth for the first time. So it's basically the croissant dough that's been put through a waffle maker and then infused with delicious sweeteners like Nutella, for example. I think you can get some savoury ones as well, but it's this big, I sort of say it's like a really buttery toasted sandwich, and it's been dubbed Korean street food because it is a mad craze in Korea.
Wow. And so what do you put toppings on it or?
Yeah. So you can have it infused with Nutella. You can have ice cream on top. Oh. It's sort of one of those things. You can have chopped chips,
anything.
I also
love waffles and I love croissants.
Well,
so
you know
what?
I think the croffle could be for you. And there are three places where you can get it in Perth now. So one is a cafe in Floreat. It's called Fave, and that's only opened about a fortnight ago.
That's just around the corner from me.
That's at the Floreat Forum.
Yeah,
so that is a winner. Northbridge's aptly named cafe Guilty Pleasure is the second spot, or Newcastle Street's Hanabing, which
I've been to Hanabing.
The self-professed first Korean dessert cafe in Perth.
Have you been to Hanabing?
I have not, but I think now that they have croffles, I will have to go.
Yeah, you know what? Have you ever had a cruffin, which is like a cross between a croissant
and a
muffin?
No.
Not as
so
great.
So that is the one hybrid that has not been a successful marriage. Obviously, the cronut was a big success.
It's going to end in divorce, that one.
That was Australia's way of saying, we can get in on this hybrid. And we mixed together things that probably didn't quite belong together. But apparently this one, background check is all good. The croffle is a winner. So that's not going to end up like the cruffin. And people are already going absolutely nuts for it. And the one, the cafe at Floreat, you can get a savoury version. So it sort of has a twisted cheese sort of vibe through it.
Right.
So I'd be pretty keen to learn more about that one or see if you can get like a ham and cheese one, because obviously it'd be interesting mixture of sweet and savoury put together. So it's just very buttery because it uses the dough from a croissant. And then you can either make it super sweet with Nutella or, you know, strawberry topping, ice cream, anything like that. So clearly not one for those on a diet. But after the year everybody's had in 2020, I think it's...
Yeah, just spoil yourself.
At least we can look back on 2020 and went, well, look, the world was broken, but the croffle was born.
Exactly.
So you take the wins with the losses.
Exactly. I think there's the Michael Jordan documentary and the croffle are the two best things.
Maybe
the results of the US presidential election, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true.
And now, so that's the good news today.
Yeah,
but there is some bad news as well for
Tell Michael Jordan.
For basketball lovers, talking about Jordan.
Yeah, absolutely. So now this is something that doesn't make for a happy Friday. $2.9 million was spent only last year on brand new basketball courts in Lathlane. So that's right near the West Coast Eagles' new headquarters.
Yep.
They've had a lot of dramas with rates, and they've been slugged hundreds of thousands of dollars. So you'd be pretty peeved off if you were a rate payer in Lathlane, because $2.9 million went into making these brand new multi-purpose courts.
Yeah.
And they have not been in use as of the end of next week. It'll be 1 year that they have been open
what
for.
What are they,
and
like, roped off or?
Closed down. Yep, so the basketball hoops have simply been removed. So they're basketball courts without a basketball hoop. So effectively, they're a slab of concrete. And the reason for this is because of noise complaints about the ball hitting the backboard.
The backboard, so not even the bouncing. The bounce is like, because you know,
that's quite loud, yeah, and obviously very persistent. So no, apparently residents feel that the courts are built way too close to neighbouring driveways, and it exceeds the volumes that are legally allowed.
Wow.
The Town of Victoria Park boss Anthony Valuta said 7 complaints were received from residents, with 3 relating to noise off the backboard. So now staff are looking into finding a suitable alternative with a bespoke product on their radar, but it all depends on the availability of an acoustic engineer.
Wow.
So
but there's also 3 complaints is not that many.
No, like, to shut it down for 11 months.
Yeah, that just seems like, especially after you spent nearly $3 million bucks on it.
Correct.
And what are they going to use?
$1 million
like
per
foam
complaint.
Is the backboard? So
exactly.
It's like every shot is just like, whoop.
yeah, and it just like falls down. You should be shooting nothing but net anyway. Like those Lathlane basketballers, clearly they take a good hard look at
they
themselves.
They just need to get the aim in.
Throwing bricks.
Get the eye in. Yeah, so as you can imagine, it's beginning to frustrate residents and ratepayers because the expensive facility is no closer to being reopened than when it was first closed down in January. So part of me thinks, well, what did they expect? If you build a basketball court, you're not going to like a library.
Yeah, yeah.
But also maybe they could have taken a little bit less than 11 months to find a solution, but also they're no closer to it because of the availability of the acoustic engineer.
When I heard it was going to be noise complaints, I assumed that it was going to be from kids hanging around, you know, and like just trash talking each other, like, you know, famously depicted on White Men Can't Jump, possibly the greatest sports movie ever. And also completely not true, I can jump.
No, that's a lie.
Yes, I wasn't prepared for any follow-up questions on that statement, so thanks, Bonnie, for shooting me down. But yeah, so noise off the backboards. Well, there you go. That's one for the books.
Yeah, well, I think that sort of sums up 2020, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's you build a basketball court and then you get a little bit sad when there's noise off the basketball backboard. So
at least we can make ourselves feel better by sort of stuffing croffles in our faces.
I would hope that next week on the West Live you have an update on what they taste like. I'm actually going to the Floret Forum tomorrow, so I might report back myself.
Please
do. It'd
be
rude not to. They're on the kids menu, which I'm not really mad about. I'm very happy to be
here. It's cheaper though, right?
$12. Yeah,
I can live with that.
Yeah, it's not offensive.
No, so, that's fine.
Yeah, I think that that's where you'll find me. And I hope you also do your research.
Yeah, of
course. As all good journalists do, go and do your homework and get yourself
All three places that you mentioned, I think I will have to test out.
It's like a pub crawl, a croffle crawl.
Yeah, I will be crawling after eating three of them by the sounds of it.
Embracing the croffle craze with a croffle crawl.
Bonnie Rayner, thank you for bringing us all the big news in the Wild West.
Hard hitting.
That's it for me, folks. We've made it to the end of the week. Tune in at 8:45 a.m. on Monday, and you will hear Jenna Clark back hosting the show over on thewest.com.au and Perth Now. You'll be able to listen live, or you can catch up on a replay of the show at 12:30 p.m. And as always, you can download the podcast wherever you get your potties. Have a great weekend, folks.
The West Live. You've been listening to The West Live with Ben O'Shea for Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.